Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Build your farms tall, not wide. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca, and today is April the 1st.
Well, ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha. Who is that?
You're not joking about that either.
I'm not joking about it.
Yeah.
Simon, I forgot we need an April Fool's joke. Do you have a good one up your sleeve?
That was it. Right there. I just did it.
The know? Ha, ha, ha?
Yeah, yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. There's a little bit of a misunderstanding about April Fool's. Like, it's not as big a thing in the West as people in Asia sometimes think it is. You know, there are unofficial holidays that are surprisingly big, like St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
That get no attention at all outside of North America, or even in some areas of North America. But then there are other holidays, like April Fool's Day, that get ridiculous amounts of attention, even though it's really like the sort of thing you might hear about once a year, or kids might do something at school, but, you know.
Well, I think it's because the idea of playing a joke or pranking somebody is so appealing. So even though April Fool's
Well, it is,
not,
but it's scary, too.
It could
because
be.
Because you basically start like a prank war if you're not careful, right? You do something to them, and then they do something worse to you. And then you have to do something back. And so I think people are a little cautious about
pranking. I think pranking. That's a good idea. Okay, let's be on pranking. And let's
that's
talk.
It. There's no more prank
no more
in
prank.
The rest of the program today.
No more pranks. I promise, no more pranks.
Yeah.
Okay, friends, we are going to talk about ag tech today. So when we talk about ag tech, ag just stands for agriculture.
Yeah, we have to be careful there. We're not saying ag, E-G-G tech.
Ag
We're saying
tech.
Ag tech as in agriculture.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Simon, what are some ag tech things? Like, can you think of some?
It's basically any technology or innovation that is affecting farming. So it could be things as simple as like the introduction of a tool, like a tractor or mechanization. It could be some sort of chemical, like a fertilizer or a bug spray or things like that. Could be genetic manipulation of crops like biotechnology. It could be installing digital sensors in a field and using drones to track the growth of plants or the spread of insects, things like that. Any kind of area where technology is being used to increase the amount of food you're producing in the space you have, basically,
yes,
with the resources you have.
So using technology in agriculture. We've used technology in agriculture for a long time, but now with all these new inventions, we're using it at a faster pace. Now, Simon, I know you come from an agricultural area in Canada.
I do.
And I'd like to ask you, can you tell us a little bit about where you come from? And also, what ag tech have you seen them deploy in the past maybe 10 or 15 years?
Well, I have been living in Taipei for more than 10 or 15 years. So
yes,
it's hard to say what technology is actually appearing on the ground. But one of the things I understand, my brother works in agriculture science.
Okay.
And I would say some of the main things are the growing use. Well, they're pretty much dominant now. The majority of crops that have been genetically engineered or modified. So that's one of the big things. And people don't understand the advantage that that brings, like particularly in crops like corn and soybeans. It means you can grow those crops in areas where previously you wouldn't really have been able to grow them. And they're very important, obviously, to people's sort of diet and nutrition. We use them for all kinds of different things.
Right.
So the GMO stuff, but in terms of other technology, there's been a lot of chemical innovation, I would say, in terms of, though not so much recently, that was sort of an older green innovation. So fertilizers, things like that. Now the trend seems to be cutting back on fertilizers, largely because of government policies. But people are learning to sort of farm with less chemical input. So I guess that's kind of a reverse technology, learning different techniques. The other one that really stands out, though, is drones and sensors.
Right. Yeah. So do you see drones flying around, like when you go back to Canada for vacation, like when you drive past the fields? Like, do you actually see them? Like, do you see them flying around?
No. They're pretty small. No, but I mean, the notable thing is, like, so for example, my brother, for his job, had to become a drone pilot.
Wow.
So it's sort of become, you know, there's like a license you have to get or whatever.
Right.
And it's become kind of an integral, integral.
Integral
part.
Means you must have.
It's integrated in, an essential part. Of sort of anybody who's working in agri-science or agribusiness.
You have to be able to fly a drone.
One of the basic skills. Like you have to have a driver's license. You have to have whatever the hazardous materials license is to use different chemical sprays. You know, it's one of the basic things you would sort of need now.
Okay. Well, we're going to shift gears. We are going to fly from Canada. We are actually heading to Dubai today. And it's very interesting. We'll be talking about vertical farming. But let's get into our first reading for today first.
Gardens in the Desert. A vertical farming startup is bringing fresh produce to the Middle East. When Sky Kurtz set out to grow produce in the desert via vertical farming in 2016, laying the groundwork for what became Dubai-based ag tech startup Pure Harvest Smart Farms, people thought we were crazy, he says. I was fearful I would never get off the ground. But Kurtz's plan came at a time when the United Arab Emirates, UAE, was beginning to take the idea seriously. And companies like Pure Harvest began cropping up. Over the past 9 years, Pure Harvest Farms has become one of the sector's biggest players. It has raised more than $450 million in funding, according to market analysis company PitchBook, and grows an array of crops that includes tomatoes, green vegetables, and berries in temperature-controlled facilities. With farms strategically located throughout the UAE, the company boasts the capacity to produce over 12 million kilograms of crops annually. Unlike other ag tech companies, which were designed for temperate climates, Pure Harvest developed technologies specifically built to withstand the harsh climates of the Middle East. Unlike other ag tech companies that focus on niche produce and cater to premium markets, Pure Harvest sells a wide range of produce and supplies to major supermarket chains across the country.
We start off the article, we're talking about vertical farming. Simon, can you tell us what is vertical farming?
Well, there's two words. You'll hear them a lot in English. Horizontal, which means side to side.
Yes.
And vertical, which means up and down. So the idea here is normally when you think of a farm, you think of somebody getting a hold of a field, like a big flat area of land, and then planting crops all around that land. If you're vertical farming, though, you're trying to grow things in stacks, like stacking boxes up higher. So you use a smaller area of land, but you're still growing very intensively in terms of the crops you're developing.
Yes. And in vertical farming, it's usually indoors. So because it's indoors, we don't have to worry about, is there enough sunlight? Is there enough water? How clean is the air? Because it's indoors and it's in a highly controlled environment.
Yeah.
So vertical farming, or like as Simon said, it's basically growing your crops in stacks. Most of the time, this is indoors. It's always indoors. And it uses 90% less water than traditional farming.
Yeah, think of shelves, for example.
Yes.
When we say stacks, we really just mean kind of on shelves.
Yes, usually on shelves. It uses 99% less land. You don't need to use pesticides because you are indoors and it's in a highly controlled environment. So this is what we're talking about today, vertical farming. Well, and then we are talking about a vertical farming startup. So it's a new new startup. It's a new company, and it's bringing fresh produce to the Middle East. Simon, let's talk about produce. Produce is vegetables and fruits, right?
Yeah. You produce produce.
You produce produce.
That's the classic word versus word for English teachers.
That's a good one.
Produce
means you make it differently.
Verb. That's right. Produce.
Produce.
And produce.
Produce.
Yeah. Okay. Produce is the noun.
Produce is the noun, yeah. The fresh vegetables and fruits.
Yeah.
And then
but
produce.
Normally when you produce things, you produce a product. So produce, like the fresh vegetables, it's really only used for things you've grown.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So like vegetables and fruit.
So
yeah.
Friends, please note the difference in pronunciation. You produce, and then this is produce, the noun. Well, let's talk about this new startup. Simon, let's talk about, so the founder is a man, his name is called Sky Kurtz,
mm-hmm.
and he started this startup back in 2016, and he's trying to grow produce in the desert using vertical farming. Can you tell us a little bit more about the startup?
Well, one of the things you mentioned, I don't know so much about this specific startup, but one of the things you mentioned was that when you are growing things vertically, it's usually indoors, and so you don't need to worry about air quality and light and things like that. That's sort of true mm-hmm. once you have the facility built and ready. Because
yes.
you have to input a tremendous amount of resource into making sure the facility can control the climate and the moisture and things like that.
So Simon, that's a really good point because I actually looked up what is the cost of doing vertical farming compared to traditional farming. And well, according to Gemini and ChatGPT, the cost of setting this up is 5 to 8 times the cost of traditional farming. It's extremely expensive because, like you said, you need a controlled space.
Well, so you would never grow, for example, like wheat or corn or soybeans that need, you know, a lot of fields because they're, you know, it's like you use that corn to feed animals, livestock.
Yes.
So you need a lot of it and it has to be cheap.
It has to, yes.
So you would use, for this sort of thing, you would grow things like, you remember, I don't know, recently, I remember here in the office having like mini watermelons that were sort of very expensive and sold at a premium, you know, that sort of thing. Or maybe our listeners have seen square watermelons that they sort of developed for the Japanese market, but they're very expensive. That's the sort of thing you would grow
yes.
in this kind of environment.
And because this kind of vertical farming, it uses up a lot. Well, we don't use natural sunlight. You use LED lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's usually air conditioned as well. There's a professional term called HVAC, which is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
Yeah.
So the
it's
cost,
usually pronounced HVAC.
HVAC.
That term, yeah.
Okay. The cost of HVAC and LED lighting is very, very high. So this is very energy intensive. So when you set up vertical farming, you need to buy a lot of equipment and you need to keep that place air conditioned and always have the LED lights on. So vertical farming is very energy intensive. This we need to say right off the bat, right from the start. But let's continue. So
it's also complicated though, right? Which is why they're calling this company like an ag tech company.
Yes.
Because you need to be managing like different, basically digital, like computerized systems for example, water management.
Yes.
Because if there's too much water, the plants don't do well. If there's too little water, the plants don't do well. You want to be able to recycle as much water as possible because you're in a desert.
Right.
You know, and that's just one example. Then
But Simon, we will get into this a little bit later. We use very little water in vertical farming. That's the beauty of vertical farming.
But you do that because of the high-tech systems.
Yes, you need to install a high-tech system, and this is extremely expensive to set up. So the startup cost is very, very high. So that is why let's go back to our first paragraph. When this Dubai-based ag tech startup, Pure Harvest Smart Farms, we have smart right in the name of the company, Pure Harvest Smart Farms, because like Simon says, we use a lot of technology here. So that's why you are a smart farm. You're not a dumb farm. And then people thought they were crazy. And the founder said he was fearful this would never get off the ground. Get off the ground. We use this all the time in English.
It just means sort of go from a startup to becoming successful, but use it much more generally than in business. So like anything you're trying to start, if you make it successful, then you've got it off the ground. You should think of this as being like an airplane, mm-hmm. which is useless when it's sitting on the ground.
That's
you have to
true.
Get it off the ground for it to be doing the thing it's supposed to be doing.
Yes, but with this kind of system, it's actually hard to get off the ground because there's so much initial investment. Just like Simon said, with all the technology you have to invest in this, all the infrastructure that goes into building a vertical farm, it's not easy to get off the ground. But a lot of things in life, it's about timing. And this startup came at a time when the UAE, we say UAE for short, the full name is United Arab Emirates. And the UAE is basically made up of seven city-states, the most famous one being Dubai, another famous one being Abu Dhabi. But there's seven of them put together as this kind of loosely linked kingdom. And in the kingdom of the UAE or United Arab Emirates, they wanted to support companies like Pure Harvest.
Well, you know, they're trying to develop into sort of a global center, right? So they're developing all kinds of different industries and economic ventures. And this is obviously one of them.
One of them. They want to be sufficient agriculturally, self-sufficient agriculturally as well.
Yeah.
So they started to take this idea seriously, and companies like Pure Harvest began to crop up.
Yep.
This is interesting. We're using a lot of idioms and words from agriculture today. So to crop up just means to...
Yeah, to appear.
To appear.
And
they
in this,
start to appear.
This sense, it's related to agriculture, like you said, crops, right? Things you grow. One day, they just kind of come out of the ground. Like you plant the seeds, but you don't know if it's going to work. And then one day, they kind of crop up. The crop appears out of the ground.
Yes. And this startup is not very young. Now it's almost a decade old, right? Here it says, over the past 9 years, Pure Harvest Farms has become one of the sector's biggest players. So sector is just the industry or area you're in. And then how much stuff or how much produce are they producing now?
Well, I guess we actually still don't know if they are off the ground because they use a very special term there, right? They say, oh, what's the term they've used? They say... raised more than $450 million in funding, which doesn't mean they've earned more than $450 million. It means that's how much investment money they've collected.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, like we've said several times now, it's very expensive to start this kind of venture. And, you know, he noted at the end of the first paragraph, people thought they were crazy because they were growing things in a desert.
Yes. Well, now we don't really know if they're profitable yet, but it seems like they should be because here it says they grow an array of crops that include tomatoes, green vegetables, and berries, and temperature-controlled facilities. That's what we were talking about at the beginning.
So they're definitely successfully growing things.
They're successfully growing things. Now, the question is, have they recouped or have they broke even? Have they recouped their costs? Have they broke even?
They're not going to tell us.
They're not going to tell us. Because they're still raising funds. They don't want, maybe it's wise not to tell us. But here it says.
But it is significant that they have successfully managed to be growing things
that's
in the
true.
Desert, right?
And a lot of things. Here at the end of this paragraph, we see that they boast the capacity to produce over 12 million kilograms of crops annually. That is a lot of crops.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, they have a lot of crops that they are growing. But what makes Pure Harvest special, Simon?
Well, I suppose you're referring to the third paragraph here, I assume.
Yes.
They make note of the fact that usually when you have a company of this kind, it's designed for temperate climates, and this is not in a temperate climate. So very briefly, what is a temperate climate? It's basically what you would think of as kind of a northern or southern country where they have four seasons, like winter, spring, summer, fall. And that would make it temperate.
And the weather is mild, right?
Well, during some parts of the year. So, for example, in Canada, the reason you might start a company like this is so that you can grow, for example, fresh tropical fruit in the winter. Because a temperate climate normally only has like one or two or two and a half growing seasons, depending on whether or not you can be growing things in spring and fall, right? But you have a much shorter summer. And so you're basically trying to continue growing things during the off season when, you know, fruit goes up in price when it becomes imported, right?
Right.
So it's more valuable if it's during a time of year when that fruit isn't normally around. And so that's what they're trying to take advantage of. Here, though, they're taking that to a real extreme. They're basically trying to grow things in an area where the environment is always hostile and never really naturally suitable for growing these products.
Yes, and another word we use for hostile environment is harsh climate. Mm-hmm. The harsh climate of the Middle East, because as we know, the Middle East is extremely hot. We are in desert area here. It can go up to over 50 degrees Celsius in the UAE. So it's very, very harsh climate. And then also, another unique thing about this ag tech company is, like Simon, like you said at the beginning of this program, usually when we talk about vertical farming, we are producing these like leafy greens or these very expensive strawberries or maybe, like you said, interesting watermelon. Maybe I'm not sure if they grow watermelon
hops vertical. For making beer is a very common one.
And these are greens that grow extremely fast because you want them to grow fast so you can grow your next batch. So they have very short life cycles. We hope to grow things that grow extremely fast and we can sell at a high price. This is the usual way to do vertical farming. And so we can call this all of these kind of products niche produce.
Yeah, that's right. And I would note there for our listeners that you just said it in the Canadian way. I also say niche. Linda on the reading threw out the classic American niche. I don't know if you noticed that. It's stuck in my ear like a needle. But neither is incorrect, obviously.
Both of them are okay.
We're both going to be saying niche, but, you know, if you want to sound like an American, go ahead and say niche like Linda did. And so basically, a niche is a small, highly specialized segment of something. And so, yeah, square watermelons would be a good example of that, right?
Yes. So in the past, vertical farming is usually for niche produce, like very expensive and in small portions of produce that you sell to people who are willing to pay a lot of money. But Pure Harvest is trying to sell a wider range of produce. So this makes them a little bit different. But let's get into our next reading where we talk about the need for less water. This is one of the compelling reasons why we need companies like Pure Harvest. Let's get into the second reading.
A hot market. The UAE has rapidly become a global hub for ag tech innovation, attracting diverse companies from around the world. Global demand for efficient indoor food production is surging, given climate change disrupting traditional agriculture as water sources dry up and temperatures rise. In the United States, the Colorado River, responsible for irrigating 15% of the nation's farmland, is drying up rapidly. Meanwhile, across the Horn of Africa, prolonged droughts are responsible for more than 23 million people experiencing severe hunger. The Middle East, particularly the UAE, experiences brutal heat waves, with less than 1% of the land suitable for agriculture. This makes the country heavily dependent on food imports, with over 80% of its food coming from abroad. Producing locally not only reduces the costs and carbon emissions associated with transportation, but also makes the UAE less reliant on imports.
So the UAE has become a hub in many areas of innovation, including ag tech now. And why is a global demand for indoor food production surging? To surge just means to rise really, really fast to a new high, to suddenly increase. Why are people moving farming indoors?
Okay, well, I mean, there is a reason. The reason they give here is effectively because of water control.
Yes.
But one of the things that I think is probably important to note very quickly here is that the UAE is a hot market for this stuff because the UAE is a premium market. They have lots of money for expensive vegetables. And so as we deal with the issue of starvation in the world or food insecurity, we're not really going to fix those issues with square watermelons, right? We're going to fix them with basic staple foods like rice or grain or things like that that are available for people. And so, you know, I suppose the issue here is what they're kind of noting is there's a need for efficiency in farming. Yes. And so the technologies that are developed here can maybe be used more broadly.
That's true. Simon, you make a good point. Like, vertical farming is probably not going to solve the world's hunger problem, because as we said, the things that you grow in vertical farming is usually more premium. And these are like your salad, the greens that go to your salad, your leafy greens, microgreens, and herbs. That's usually what's grown. But here we talk about the problem with climate change. There's water scarcity, there's a lot less water, and the temperatures are on the rise. So that's why ag tech innovations like vertical farming is also surging. It's also increasing. And then I want to get into our next paragraph when we talk about the brutal heat waves. Like right now in parts of the world with climate change, the world, the temperatures have changed. I think where we're living here in Asia, we also feel it. Mm-hmm. The summers feel a lot longer. We don't feel like we have a winter, or we have a very, very short winter. We used to have two seasons. Now it feels like one long summer all year round.
Yeah.
With maybe little snaps of winter. But here we're talking about heat waves. And there's a scary number here. It says less than 1% of the land in the world is now suitable for agriculture. Well, okay, no,
that's
just
the UAE.
Thank God it's just the UAE. But just the UAE, there's less than 1% land suitable for agriculture. So because of this, the UAE needs a lot of food imports. They need to import a lot of food. But when we import a lot of food, there's a lot of transportation costs. And there's also a lot of dependency on the outside world. And as we saw during the COVID pandemic, when you rely too much on the outside world, that could become a problem when you have things like pandemics or wars, when transportation issues become a problem.
Yeah.
So this is part of the attraction why vertical farming is taking off in places like the UAE. On that note, we need to end today's program, but there's so many things we still want to talk about. So friends, please come back tomorrow and we'll continue this journey of vertical farming in the UAE. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Simon.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.